Welcome to this study. I think it's study number 13. We're starting the sixth chapter of 1 Timothy today. But before we get there, we're going to do a little bit of the review from last week as we looked at the last part of chapter 5 of 1 Timothy. So, review. The first one, 1 Timothy is the first book in what is known as the blank epistles. Fill in the blank.
Pastoral.
There it is. Yep. Pastoral. I thought you were going to say Gnosticism.
That's the answer to everything.
Yes, pastoral. Just put pastor and then A-L. You got pastoral. The next one is this group of books or letters, 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus. They're all written by Paul, and it deals with church blank.
Leadership.
Very good. You are the new valedictorian of the class. Third, the church will be blank as strong as its leaders.
Just.
Yeah. What?
Just?
No. Only. Yeah, only. You're the new valedictorian, Cheryl. You're a salutatorian there, Bobby. The fourth one, blank, who blank, the affairs of the church, blank, are worthy of double honor. Take your blank. First blank is elders. Who blank the affairs of the church? What do they do?
Oversee.
Yeah, direct or oversee. Same kind of a word. The affairs of the church blank are worthy of double honor. That's that blank is very important.
Leaders?
No. Sorry, Sharon. It's everybody says this when they don't know what to say. And it can be a very deep subject.
Wow.
Hey, there it is. You're valedictorian back. Well.
Is it well?
Well.
Oh, of the church.
Elders who direct the affairs of the church well.
You should have said Jack and Jill.
Yeah. Well, they went up the hill.
Yeah,
okay. So, elders who direct the affairs of the church well are worthy of double honor. Five, good church leaders do not show blank with those in the church.
Favoritism.
Yes, favoritism or partiality, which is kind of the same thing. To be a good church leader, you know, you got to be objective, and it doesn't matter who may be involved. It's like it's got to be, there's no favoritism there. Got to deal with what needs to be dealt with, and no matter who's involved with it. All right, so let's read, we're only looking at two verses today. Chapter 6, 1 and 2. Let's just read, somebody can just read both verses and be done with it. Who would like to read it out loud? It makes no difference.
Okay. All who are under the yoke of slavery should consider their masters worthy of full respect, so that God's name and our teaching will not be slandered. Those who have believing masters are not to show less respect for them because they are brothers. Instead, they are to serve them even better, because those who benefit from their service are believers and dear to them. These are the things you are to teach and urge on them.
Okay. Guess what this chapter deals with?
Slavery.
Well, you know, he's talking about slaves and masters. I mean, we don't have that today. But we can look at this chapter as it deals with submission and authority. It's kind of what this chapter deals with. Slaves and masters, I mean, did you realize that the Roman Empire, half of the people that lived in the Roman Empire were slaves? And where did they get the slaves from?
Their battles.
Yeah. After they win their battles, they would take whoever was left, and they'd become property of the Roman government. And they became slaves. And so therefore, if they're slaves, that meant that somebody then also owned them. And they had to do what the Roman person who either bought them or said that they needed these slaves as servants, whatever it is, they had to do exactly what they were told to do. Did they have any rights? Did slaves have any rights? No, they didn't. So, I mean, Paul in his day has got to be dealing, this is a tough subject here. What do you do with those who become believers who are slaves? What do you do with those who have become a part of the church and the Christian faith who are masters over slaves? And there might be some who are Christians, some who are believers, and some who aren't. So that's kind of where this is kind of all coming from. And so so Paul is coming at it from the angle of submission and authority. Well, how are you going to deal with this issue? And there's some things that are just very difficult to deal with, you know, even today in issues with the church type of a thing and situations and circumstances that go on. What I want to draw your attention to is that in the very first verse of chapter 6, it uses the word, depending upon your translation, you see the word yoke? Okay, now we're not talking about eggs here. I just want you to know that. Not eggs. What is a yoke?
It's like the thing they put on the oxen, the harness. It's like a harness.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a farm girl.
It's just like most slaves were treated better than animals. I mean, no. Most slaves were treated no better than cattle or property. That's what I meant to say. You know, you became, and of course, and that was your whole life. I mean, you didn't think about, I mean, how is someday am I going to be free? Is there going to be some day that I'm going to experience freedom and get away from what my master says or what he makes me do? To a slave, it was like, that's just kind of where things were, unless somebody came in and conquered the Romans, and then you'd become slaves of whoever else conquered them. Or you flee and try to hide type of a thing. But what kind of a life is that if you have to hide from your oppressing people who are looking for you? So slavery for the Romans was a very effective system, because without slaves, then no one would do the work. The Romans like to have somebody else do their work. What does that sound like in today's setting? Is that still done or practiced today in some countries? Or maybe it's even in ours. I don't know. But I just think of more of it's more socialism. You have the higher-ups, the people who are wealthy, who want the lower people, the lower class, to do all the tasks, to do all the work. The ones who are, it's kind of almost like a caste system. We don't have that here in America, but you have that in India. You got different castes that are there. The higher caste you are part of, I mean, somebody else lower than you does the work. Socialism, we have a lot of that, is like in Russia and other places. And there's talk about that even today, even in our own country. You know, used to be where people wanted to work. And there's probably still people that do. But now we hear that people get paid to stay home and not work. Become dependent on the government. Become dependent on some other thing versus what you can do yourself. And so it tells us a little bit about history. So we don't have to deal with slavery, but we do have to deal with authority. Because we have authority no matter where we are in life. There's going to always be somebody we have to go through or talk to or to get, you know, even if you have a job, there's usually somebody who's on top of you, who's got more authority than you. And we deal with that. And so some of us are better at dealing with it than others. Right, Sharon?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean anything by that. So you know that. I just want everybody else here to think like, oh, that poor Sharon, what she's got to put up with. Yeah, I say that about Cheryl. Poor Cheryl. Dean. Well, we won't go there. There's facts about authority here. I got four different facts. Submitting to authority is not a natural trait. True or false? It's true. We don't like anyone to be over us or telling us what to do. You know, so it's, so to be submissive is something that God's got to work in us and help us to be submissive when we need to be submissive. Interesting thing is that when to a wedding, you know, there are a lot of brides today who do not want you to read from Ephesians because it's got that one word in it. And what is that one word?
Submissive.
Submit or submissive, be submissive. Because you think it applies to the woman. But if you look at the context there, it's both are to be submissive to each other as they are to Christ. Now, so it's like if you can't be submissive to one another, well, then it means you're probably not being very submissive either to Christ. But if you got things right with the Lord, it should be a two-way street where you learn those things. How long did it take you to learn those things, Denny? And it's you got to work at it, don't you? You got to work at it. So, number two, facts about authority is struggles with authority are sometimes complex and not easily solved. And that does happen. The third one, some in authority have not earned our respect. You know, if you've ever had a job with someone who has got authority above you, it's a lot easier taking orders from someone who you respect than someone that you go like, they're just wanting you to do everything and they don't do a thing to help. You know, they don't even lift a finger to kind of just come alongside, where it would make things a lot easier if they would just kind of help along with you. But no, I'm just a peon and this person's a boss or whatever it is. So it's very difficult with how you handle a situation like that when it comes to be submissive.
I used to tell my kids that when they were in school, when there was teachers that they didn't like.
Yeah.
I told them, you know, you have to show them respect.
Yeah.
Because they have authority over you. And they're like, no, they have to earn my respect. No, you still have to show them.
Yeah. So there's a good illustration about authority. I think we see that even in, you know, the kids today, how do they handle authority?
Not very well.
Not good. I mean, it's always been that way. You know, in the 60s, it was rebel against the establishment. I didn't even know what establishment was. All I knew is that a dad said, so I better do it, or I'll regret it. But it just meant that, you know, you rebel against any kind of authority figure. That was kind of like in the 60s and the 70s. And whatever you're told to do, you do the opposite. Or you live that way, live the opposite. So authority is not something that comes natural to us. The last one here, that a resisting authority is not always wrong. You can resist authority if it tells you to do something that goes against God's word. And then we're not to go along with it. And so we can speak up. We can sit down, fight. I mean, I'll just say that this something is wrong when we see it, because it's something that God says is wrong, for one thing, and I'm not gonna do something that is going against my God or my Savior, Jesus Christ. So Christians are good at expressing themselves, aren't they? No, Christians are good at being like sheep, going before their shearer. You kind of just let them do whatever they want to do. They put you in any position you want so that they can shear the wool off you. They take the wool and send you out without your fleece. But I mean, it's typical. I mean, I include myself in that. It's easier to not say anything. It's like, don't rock the boat. Don't be confrontive. I'm not a confrontive kind of a person. I don't like being a combat guy type of thing. Were you going to say something? I thought you had a word.
Controversy.
Controversy. I'm not good at controversy.
I don't either.
Type of thing, you know? Or someone that likes to argue to show their point. You know, I like to think things through and think it over. And if somebody asks me, I'm kind of telling them. But I'm not one to be out leading the charge type of a thing. Unless it's something that really gets into your craw. And we got to go like, you know, enough is enough. This is what we got to do. How we do things, so. Okay, let's go on here then to get into chapter. We did read that one, didn't we?
Yeah, I read it.
That's right, you read it, Kathy. Hey, thank you, by the way. Number one there is Paul addresses another specific group of people in his day. Who are they? Blank. I know we did. Blank and blank. Slaves and masters. Today, we would probably refer to that as what? We don't have slaves, we don't have masters, but we do have boss. A boss could be a master, and then instead of a slave, you've got workers or employees type of a thing. You know, so Paul is still helpful if we look at today in 2022, because there is authority that is still in place. How would a slave who found freedom in Christ respond to their master? You know, you have to kind of put yourself way back into 60 AD type of a thing. If you were a slave and your master was not a Christian, but you were, how would you deal with that? Here's multiple guess. Everybody likes multiple choice. Would you say, I am Spartacus? You know who Spartacus is? Don't feel bad if you don't.
The warrior.
He went against the Romans, Spartacus. I mean, would you revolt if you were a Christian slave, but your master was not a Christian? Would you revolt and just say, I'm not going to do that? I'm done with that because I'm a Christian. B, you just don't submit. And you would even kind of like get a little bit more rougher and you'd strike back. You would just take it out on the person and you would probably get physical and punch him in the nose. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm free in Christ. I guess that's all. That's your multiple choice, A and B. What would you do?
Why either one?
Neither one. Okay.
Yeah, I hate to make it more complicated, but it probably depends on if you're an individual slave or if you have a family and the master separated you from your children. Or I mean, there it's kind of can be very complicated.
That's a good point.
You know, if he separated you from your family or your spouse, I mean, that it would be very hard. Mm-hmm. And you could be a Christian and that could happen to you. I mean, that would be very hard to have respect for that.
Mm-hmm. So Paul comes at it in this direction. Honor. Honor. Honor your boss. Even if you don't like him, you still honor him, kind of like respect. He talked about, he said that to widows. Well, he said that about widows. We're to honor the widows. There's double honor when it comes to the leaders or the like the elders or the overseers who direct the church, who do the work well. They get double honor. So that's how Paul is kind of looking at the slavery issue in his day. Because he does not, I mean, why is he doing it that way? I think you see that at the end of verse 1.
So that the name of God and the teaching may not be reviled.
Right. What does that mean, Sharon?
Well, so that they're living their life so that their masters can see Christ in them or God in them and not be put off by Christianity.
Okay. Which takes us to number 2. How can slaves bring a bad name to Christianity? How can slaves bring a bad name to Christianity?
Disrespect and slander.
Yeah. It's kind of that simple, isn't it, what he's got there? Because he's concerned about that as Christians and what we are being taught, what we know about Jesus, that is what's more important than anything else. So if you are going to make an influence or make a difference in a Roman Empire with people who are against you, you still have to love them and work for them and honor them, hoping that, you know, God will use that as a way of working in their hearts and changing them, that maybe they'd want to become a Christian too. And if they become a Christian, would that change how things go for you as that person being your boss or master, and if you're a slave?
Oh boy.
Hopefully it would. You know? And so therefore then if the boss or the master becomes a Christian, you know, he doesn't look at you anymore like a slave like he used to. He will look at you more like a what?
Brother or sister.
Yeah, a brother or sister. It's a whole different relationship. And it's a better kind of relationship. But it might take him a while to get there, you know. But, you know, God has a way of changing our lives, doesn't he? To make us more mellow yellow, more mellow as we go along in life as well. So what is slander? Takes number 3. What is slander?
Making false statements about somebody.
Okay, it's, you know, with the point, you want to kind of ruin that person's reputation. It's really evil. You say things that go along with slander can be gossip. You know, interesting thing. These gals that come to my office on Wednesdays, I go like, so why'd you guys come back this year? They go, we love to gossip. We like getting together to gossip. And I'm going like, well, that doesn't sound like a good reason why you should get together here. But it's kind of fun, you know. And I go, well, guess what? That's not why you're here this year. Said we're gonna have a class, which they were well open to that too. But they're on their phones, and I just go like, just they're good this year. I just say, shut off your phone, and they shut them off. They can keep them, but I think for Joy Us kids, they turn in their phones, don't they?
Yeah, actually.
And maybe that's the difference.
One little guy, he comes right in, give it to Julie Hanson, and here's my phone. I mean, they understand it. They are, you know, they're doing it or they're leaving them at home. Yeah.
And maybe that's the reason why it's so different this year.
Yeah.
That could be part of it. I don't know. But it just seems to be...
I think that was more of a problem with the girls than the boys.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, it's working.
Yeah. Interesting. So anyway, slander is the spreading of evil reports. You can invent or even repeat rumors about your neighbor. Who's your neighbor?
Yeah,
Yeah, everybody is. Everybody is. But it's there to try to ruin a person's reputation or make other people think they're bad. Or it's maybe it can also be done in a way where it makes you feel a little bit higher, a little bit better than them, kind of a thing. Has anybody here ever slandered? Has anybody fallen into slander? I'm sure we all have. Just wanted you to think about that a little bit. We all have done it. We probably find ourselves or catch ourselves doing it still today. Let's go on then before we get too convicted here. Number four, we can look at verse 2 now. But before we get to verse 2, is there any questions at all about verse 1? Get kind of a good idea where Paul's coming from with that verse. And Paul, you know, here's Paul again. He's, you know, he wants to make sure that whatever he says and whatever he does, it's all in the name of Jesus Christ. And he wants to make certain that all those who look up to him or listen to him, it all comes back to where's Jesus at in your life? And if he's not where he should be, well, he needs to be put there. We need to look at him in these situations. And sometimes that can not be the easiest thing to do.
Regarding how we treat people, I just heard something on a podcast last weekend that said it is impossible to look down on anybody else if you are laying at the feet of Jesus.
That's good. Did you hear that on this tape? Cheryl said she heard this. It's impossible to look down on someone when you are laying down at the feet of Jesus. Did you get that?
Mm-hmm.
Whoever hears this?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good statement. Let's go on to, where were we on, 4? Yeah. There's a difference between believers and unbelievers. If a slave or employee has a believing master or boss, the believing slave or employee is to show blank respect and relate to his believing authority person as a blank.
Full respect.
Show more respect.
More
respect. And relate to his believing authority person as a brother or sister. You know, you don't have to say the word. It's just that you look at that person through those kinds of eyes. 5, the relationship of a slave to his master reflects on how he blanks his master. The relationship of a slave to his master reflects on how he blank his master.
Serves.
Treats.
Goes in the right path there. Just sees. How he sees his master.
Oh.
So, I mean, it could be you serve him. What did you say, Kathy?
Treats.
I mean, treating that person. That will have a bigger influence, a bigger effect than rebellion. Or try to change, force someone to change to be somebody who they're not. So the master, boss, or authority person who is a believer is to view his slave or employee as a, we said this before a couple of times, brother or a dear friend. And it makes a difference if that is how you view somebody, as a brother. That's only if you get along with your brother. Or sister. We learned that this weekend watching our grandkids, didn't we, Sharon? They get along perfectly. All the time. That's your grandkids too.
Yeah.
Have you had them at your house and see some of the dynamics that are there?
Yeah.
Between the two of them? Yeah. I came to this conclusion. They're better off separate.
They love each other from a distance.
Well, they do, yeah. But if you split them up, it's much better than to have them together.
I noticed in church that
granddaughter was sitting with you and the grandson was sitting between Paul.
Yeah. Well, that was his idea.
Do they fight a lot?
They squabble at times.
Pretty natural.
Pick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty natural. Try to play Monopoly.
Maybe they should have another sibling. Maybe that would help.
Those are good grapes. All right. 7. The person in authority who is a believer is to show no blank. The slave who is a believer, who doesn't have a person in authority over him and who is not a believer, needs to be his boss's blank worker. These are something you got to think about for a while. The person in authority is to show no favoritism, partiality. And then the last one, the slave needs to be his boss's best worker.
So are you trying to relate this to people in employment today?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you are.
Mm-hmm. You got it.
Okay, I'm retired.
There's a lot of places that looking for people to help.
So you're saying people that are employed need to be their boss's best worker?
Well, I think you should. As a Christian, I think you should be someone that that sets you apart if you're a good worker. You know, because, I mean, you have people that like to slough off. You got people who don't, you know, they want the paycheck, but they don't want to work for it. You got some who always are complaining. You got some who don't like the boss and don't have no respect for the boss. But as a Christian, you know, it's like, hey, I should be satisfied that this person hired me. And this is only temporary, but I want to make sure that when I leave, whenever that happens, guess who's going to be a reference? The person I work for is going to be my reference. I want them to be able to say good things, or they would recommend me for another job type of thing. I don't know if kids today look at it that way or not.
They don't. They just walk out.
Yeah, they demand.
Yeah.
You know, which is usually they want the weekends off. When are they needed the most? Weekends.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's different than the way I grew up anyway. But just, you know, that's where a Christian, we should always be looked upon as someone that it's like the aroma of Christ. And that aroma should be like fresh baked bread. It always smells good to go in the house. Or chocolate chip cookies with M&M's. Or no smelling grapes. You got to taste and see those. Yeah. But it's just, you know, I just think it's kind of where Paul's coming from is, hey, if we're going to make an influence and we want to honor Christ in our life, then no matter where you are at in this life, be someone that you're always doing good. I mean, you're going to be a step probably above the best. But you want to do good things, not complain or rant. So, number 8, a blank needs to understand that his performance on the job is a reflection on his boss.
Worker.
It could be a slave. It could be a worker. It could be an employee. Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of goes both ways. Sometimes, just for small talk, you ask somebody if you at a restaurant or someplace, you kind of go like, so how long have you worked here?
2 weeks.
Yeah. If you say 2 weeks, where somebody says, well, I've been here for 20 years. What does it tell you? The one who's there for 20 years likes it. I mean, they like who they work with, they get along, whatever it is. Someone who's there like, well, I quit after 2 weeks. and moved on, well, then are they going to quit in another 2 weeks somewhere else? Or maybe they go a little bit longer but still quit. But I mean, as an employer, you want somebody who's going to what?
Stick around.
Yeah, stick around. I mean, do you like going through the process of rehiring?
Training.
Which, I mean, I think a lot of businesses now are doing that. It's just constant training over and over again. They just get someone broke in and then they quit. They get somebody else up there. I mean, that would be tough. It would be tough. Number 9, during Paul's and Timothy's day, slaves couldn't change owners or jobs. Why do you think Paul gives Timothy these instructions?
To influence him not to give up and keep going.
Well, yeah, it's just, I mean, yeah, it's good. I mean, you can say, you know, it's tough. It's tough to work here. It's tough to do this or that. It's tough to take orders, da, da, da. But it comes back to so that God's name and what Christianity taught wouldn't be slandered. You know, if you say you're a Christian, then you also want to live that life. What does Jesus say about this or that kind of thing? How did Jesus treat other people? And how many different kinds of people did Jesus meet? A bunch.
All kinds.
And the only ones that gave him a hard time were who?
The religious leaders,
you know? You read any book. I read Hudson Taylor, a book a friend of mine in Dickinson gave me. And that was just that time of just struggling with the church and just kind of going like, well, what are we here for? Why did I say yes to this place? And I read Hudson Taylor, who was a great missionary to China. And he told about how he would have to take a ship from England all the way to China. And then he'd have to go back every so often and he'd report to the Inland China Society, his mission board. And tell them what's going on, what's God doing there. Well, he came back one time, and he said, you know, I find that I relate better to the Chinese when I start to dress like them. And he grew his hair out. And he wore what the Chinese wore and everything, and he talked to them about the gospel, and he's having great success. And so he went back to England to tell them, of course, he went back kind of dressed to them would be goofy, kind of funny, but he told them the reason why. And you know the response that he got? They weren't going to support him anymore. They're going to quit his whole mission to China. And I'm going like, wow, they just didn't understand. You'd have to go there and do it yourself, or to see why he said what he said. But this is like in the 1800s. It's not, you know, 150 years ago, something like that. But it was very helpful in going like, you know, there's just going to be times where you're going to be just misunderstood, and you got to live with it. Everybody's not going to always understand you and what you're doing, what's happening type of a thing. And I go like, this happened to Hudson Taylor. He had a lot worse than I did as well. So it's just kind of interesting how the Lord is able to work and to relate cross-culturally. I mean, he had to learn Mandarin. He had to learn the Chinese language. Being from Britain, people from Britain are very formal kind of people, and they just like having things done very organized. And he did not fit that mold with his missionary experience there in China. But he was just looking at, hey, I come to just bring people the name of Jesus and to learn about him and follow Jesus Christ. And so you'd think that everybody would be on board with that. But it wasn't always that way. Any other comments? Anybody else that comes to your mind when you think of something like that happening?
you remember the day when there were no tattoos? And, you know, pierced earrings is fine. But now, what can you see today? There's things stuck and coming out all over the place. Places you go like, ugh.
My first encounter with a fellow wearing an earring was a student. Yes. He came to class wearing an earring. I walked over to my tools hangings on the deal. I grabbed a pair of pliers. He looked at me and he says, "What do you got that for?" "Well, I'm going to crimp that and you'll never get it out." He ran clear to the back of the shop and took it off. He never wore it again. Now they have me in jail.
I don't understand the ones in the nose. How do you blow your nose with a ring in there?
Or
your tongue.
Or through the eyebrow.
I know, I don't get it.
I saw one the other day from the nose to the ear.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Oh no.
Yeah. Just want to go and grab it. Yeah.
You know, but you know, it's like, you know, Jesus died for them too. And that's, I mean, I go like, well, I don't know. I mean, how do you relate to people like that? I mean, I can't get beyond the chain and the piercing. But Jesus is able to do that, I guess. I mean, I can't. I just...
Well, I think it says somewhere, you came in the world with nothing, and you leave with nothing.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, we got a new range because our old range went kaput here this week. So the guy who, one of the guys who delivered it to our house yesterday, tattoos all over the place.
On every finger and up his arm and neck. Yeah. No.
I just go like...
Not on his face, I hope.
Oh, yeah. It was on his face, too. Yeah. And he had short hair.
What do you suppose possesses them to do that?
I don't know. I guess we have to get to be a friend enough to be able to ask him why.
Well, and I think it's very costly, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Exactly. Painful. Exactly.
And painful. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they're looking for attention.
That's what I think, too.
You know, they want people to notice them.
Mm-hmm. But you know, once you get them, you can't really get rid of them, can you?
Yeah, but it's very painful.
To get rid of a tattoo?
Yeah.
Very expensive, too, to get rid of them.
Well, I mean, we have that going on in our day.
What? Tattoos?
Tattoos and piercings and...
I do not get it at all.
Either.
But and Scott will say, "Why would they do that?" I said, "Well, obviously they don't do it because they think it looks horrible. For whatever reason, they like that look. And what it is, I have no idea. But, you know, they do it because they think it looks neat."
No, cool. Cool, man. I'm looking cool.
Yeah. I've told my grandchildren, it says in Deuteronomy, do not get any tattoos.
Yeah, it does.
And they're going, "It does? It says that in the Bible?" I go, "Yes." And so I show it to them and they just go, "Whoa."
I've had a saying that I used for many years in many different situations that they're entitled to their odd opinion, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You know, whether they talk some way or tattoo their odd opinion, they're entitled to or whatever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean I go on with it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, you think of in the South Pacific, in a lot of the islands, tattooing is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cultural thing where there's a lot of...
But they have a particular design, mm-hmm, and something that goes along, mm-hmm, with it that tells, mm-hmm, a story.
Mm-hmm. Some kind
of
family thing.
It's a little different than what you see
here,
around here. All kinds of different things.
Yeah, yeah. More chaotic.
Well, and I think that the pagan people who are doing that, it's more of a religious thing or to their gods or whatever.
Those tribes. But you know, this is where it gets complicated. when our youth go to a youth convention or a youth retreat, sometimes the speakers that come and speak to the youth, what are they like?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
I mean, they, you get some of these that come in with tattoos. You get some of these that come in with the piercings. They come, you know, they're different. They're just so different. And yet then the kids come back and they go like, that was the greatest retreat I was ever on. The speaker was great. Well, what did he say? I don't know. He just did a lot of great things. Well, what were some of the great things? Just name one great thing. Can't remember.
He was too busy looking at his papers.
You know? And so then the following week, who comes with the youth group? I got my first tattoo. Because of the speaker, he had his. But
one of the kids did?
Well, no, I just made that up.
Oh.
But that's, I mean, you see the culture today.
It's changed a lot.
Oh, it has.
The last 5 years, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, that speaker probably is a Christian.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Not denying that at all.
My kids are going to relate to that person.
Sure.
A lot more than they do today.
Oh, I know. It's just, for whatever the reason is, I don't get it. But I guess that could be the same thing like with Hudson Taylor. And with those back in his day, they didn't get it as well. But, well, let's go on here. We got to finish because that's what we do here. Number 10, Paul gave instructions to people in different roles in this book. Name them. Can you name the different roles of the different groups of people that we find in 1 Timothy? What was the first one? He was talking about
elders.
Could be elders, overseers. Could be pastors. Yep. And then he moved on to
deacons.
And then within the deacons, there was also
deaconesses.
And to deal with women.
Yeah.
He talked about women. And then he went to widows. Went to pastors, and then he talked about widows, and then were masters and slaves. So I'm just saying, you know, there are different groups of people, different kinds, and yet he has something to say to each and every one of them in his teaching here in 1 Timothy. And it's all so much that he does not want anyone to do something that would cause harm to Christ's name. I mean, everything he's doing is trying, like, this is important enough that this is, if you know, if there's going to be unity, if there's going to be a chain of command type of a thing in a church setting, Christian church, this is what's important. And so we find that in 1 Timothy. Remember, Paul is at what age here when he's writing this epistle?
63.
Well, 63 A.D., he's right in there.
Yeah.
But we know that as a person, he's older. He's an old pastor. And he writes this to Timothy, who is a young pastor. And so he's just passing on what he has learned over the years in his life about the Lord, and he's passing it on to Timothy, who will probably pass it on to some other pastor's retreat that he has later on. Okay, so the next one are just real, any kinds of questions here. 11, where is Timothy? Name the city where he is the pastor.
Ephesus.
Who says Ephesus?
Yeah.
You're correct. Population of Ephesus is about?
300,000.
300,000. It's the furthest place of a trade route in the Roman Empire. It's the furthest place away. It's in modern day, what country today where would you find Ephesus?
Turkey,
yeah. A lot of the churches, the seven letters to the churches, with seven churches in Revelation, I think they're all in Turkey. big difference there. The temple that you find in Ephesus is who stands in that temple? There was in that temple at that time.
Diana,
that is her Roman name. Mm-hmm. The Greek name for her is
Artemis.
Artemis.
I just have to say this. The other day on Jeopardy, this was a question, and they gave the Greek name, and they were looking for the Roman name. They got it wrong.
But we know someone that didn't.
There you go. Don't you know anything? All right, the temple of Artemis, or the temple of Diana, it was very impressive. It was one of the seven wonders of the world at that time. What made it so spectacular? It was larger than which other?
Parthenon.
Yeah. Parthenon, which we find in the town of Athens in Greece. And that was, the Parthenon was made for the god Zeus in Greek mythology. But Diana and Artemis, that was four times bigger.
I thought you said that.
Four times bigger than the Pantheon. And the Pantheon's huge.
Yeah.
From what I see on TV.
Is Diana a biblical name other than the temple?
Yes. Well, there's a Diana. I think there's a Diane.
There's a Diana.
Yeah. Is there a Diana?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 12. What does Paul want Timothy to do there in Ephesus? What's one of the things?
Start churches.
Well, he's a pastor of a church there in Ephesus.
Establish church leadership.
Well, he's commanded by Paul that he is to
warn against false teaching.
Yeah, warn against false teaching. And those who teach, who are false teachers, he is to kind of be mindful of them. And show them and tell them where they're wrong and where they're coming from. Okay, 13, the Roman name of the goddess that is worshipped there is?
Diana.
14, what is the Greek name of the goddess that is worshipped there? Artemis. And that's the end of our study.
What was the last one?
Artemis.
What?
Artemis.
Okay.
Artemis.
Okay, gotcha.
Great is Artemis. Paul had to hear the crowd of about 25,000 chant that for how long?
2 hours.
2 hours. Great is Artemis. And remember, Christianity was not looked upon as a valid Christian religion. It wasn't a valid religion at this time. So it cost you dearly in some way, shape, or form to be a Christian at this time. People found out that you were a Christian, it would make life tough. Which might give us a little insight that even in the day in which we live in, it might come back to that here too. Make things a little tough. Okay, let's call it quits here. Let me just...